is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. Alan Bolden of Maysville, Kentucky, on August 11, 1988. The interviewer is Lynn David. Now, your name's Alan, but everybody calls you Rye. Where did you get a nickname like that? You know why?
Yeah, I had a cousin, and he said there were 14 of us in my family. And so he couldn't remember all his names, but he nicknamed all the boys.
Yeah, so your cousin gave you the name Rye, huh?
Mm-hmm. Then I had a... Is that him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so that's how I got that nickname at Rye. So it followed me. Most people don't know my real name.
I didn't. I just assumed that was your real name.
No, most people don't know my real name. It's Alan. I know yesterday I was up to Cackler's.
Uh-huh.
And he's writing me a check. And the girl says, Rye Bone? I said, no, my name's Alan. She didn't know my name either. And I said, of course, the only people who know my name is while I was running a school for 30 years.
You came from a family of 14 children.
A family of 14. 10 boys and 4 girls.
My God, that was a bridge your parents had, wasn't it?
It was a debt back in them days, but we wasn't hungry. We was fortunate that we was able to have all we have a little food stuff on the table. We had a good landlord. Helped us out. At that time, Charlie Clark was our landlord.
Was your dad a tenant farmer then?
Yes, he was a farmer on Charlie Clark, raised tobacco stuff.
What was your father's name?
My father's name John. John Bolden.
And your mom?
My mother was Bertie Lofton Bolden.
What was her first name?
Bertie.
V-E-R-D-I-E?
No. V-I-D-I-E. Bertie.
Okay. I'm sorry, I don't hear well.
I don't talk too funny. Like I said, there were 14 of us, but we were just like the average family.
You were not average with 14 kids.
Well, at that time, we could call ourselves the average family because it was even some in worse shape than we was. Yeah. At that time, I didn't have as big a family. And we all walked to school.
How far from school were you?
From Maysville up to the Cackling Oxen House.
Oh, you lived in Maysville?
Mm-hmm. We lived in Maysville.
Where did you live?
I was raised running on Conway, the house that I own now.
How many rooms did the house have?
The house only had 3 rooms at the time.
You're telling me there were 16 people in 3 rooms?
3 rooms.
Where did you all sleep?
Well, we practically slept on top of one of them, but we had just enough room to walk between the beds.
That must be something for your mother. What do you remember about your mother?
Well, my mother was, she didn't work out too much because she didn't have much time. All she did was hung over the washboard and washed clothes and diapers and hung them out.
She must have had a wash every day then, didn't she?
Practically every day, yes. There was that many diapers and things. Of course, they didn't have the pampers now like they do now.
Yeah.
So we had to wear diapers. And then as we grew older, we helped with the smaller ones as they came out. I was a 7th child out of 14.
So you were right square in the middle.
Right square in the middle. And we had cut stone.
You
had care, cut killing for start the fire. Wood.
Oh, okay.
we had wood stove. We had to cut wood, and we had to carry our water to drink. We didn't have any well at the house at the time, so we carried the water from the place up here in town where the public well.
That was quite a ways to carry it then, wasn't
mm-hmm.
it?
The grass
wasn't that pretty rough in the winter?
Yes, it was, but it was, like I said, we was 10 boys, and we maybe take 2 or 3 water buckets at a time.
Yeah.
And we all fill our buckets up and carry them back home.
How about cooking meals for all of you kids? Did everybody pitch in to cook, or?
Well, yeah, my mother was good at that. She taught every one of us, all the boys and all the girls, how to cook. Because she did told us that, I want you all to learn to cook, so someday I'm not going to be here. I might be by yourself, so we all learned to cook. So we helped out in the kitchen.
Did she raise a garden?
Yes, we raised a garden at that time.
That's cheap.
Then, of course, the landlord would help us with corn out of field, and they raised big potato patch and cabbage patch, and they would help supply us with food.
How did your dad get to work then? How far was the farm that he worked on?
Well, my dad walked to work. It was about I said mile. It's out there, Dave Clark.
Okay, Dave Clark's place. Well, that was a walk in the winter, too, he had to walk?
Yeah, in the winter, strip out the back out, we walked across what we know at the Brooks farm now, but Dr. Est owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked across there, it was a shortcut. We went every evening after school, just the market.
So you boys all helped at the farm as well as in the home?
We all had to help on the farm. Had to go to help my dad.
What kind of man was your dad? What do you remember about him?
My dad was a good man. He's a church-going man. They brought us all. We all went to Sunday school, church. BTU at night and church again at night. We were raised up in the Christian home, going to church. We believed in that. So my dad was a good man. He wasn't mean, he didn't beat us. But when he told us something, we know he meant it and we moved out. Because now our mother was a little more, she wouldn't take a switch and beat us, but she'd whip us with a wet dish rag or something like that.
That could hurt.
That stained awful bad. But whatever she had a hand on, dish rag or a shovel, but she'd whack you with it. And that's the way we got a whipping from her. But we respect them, and they treat us, they were really good to us. They couldn't afford much. And when we grew older, well, let's go back when I was a child now. When I was growing up, I started when I was about 7, 8 years old, working for a fellow by the name of Ray Rooksburg, his wife Lena Rooksburg. And he milked cows. And my brother, Eugene, and I would go and drive the cows in for him. Then when he got done milking, at night we would take the milk at the house and strain it through them old time strainer, bottle it up and cap it. Then we would deliver the milk and the newspaper at the same time. So we had got a couple of dollars a week for doing that. Kind of helped us with our little spend money as I was a child coming up. So we did awful good out there for coming out such a big family and was able to have somebody to practically raise, they practically raised up until I went to the Army. I worked for them.
So all of you children were taught hard work?
Yeah, hard work and respect. That was the main thing, respecting one another and the older people. Didn't matter what color they were, we had to respect them.
I think that's a good lesson, don't you?
Yes, it is. I think that's the trouble. Days we don't have enough respect for the younger people. We didn't say yes, no. We say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, when we were coming up. But today you don't hear that too much.
With all the family and all the work you did, I'm sure you still had time to have a good time.
Yes, we like I said, we got our work done, but we couldn't play until we got our work done. Then we had a pretty good sized yard, and we'd go out there and we'd play, and we'd play up and down the alley with the other children that was raised up and down an alley. It was several people. When we came up, Major Lake was a good sized place. We had 6 grocery stores at one time.
Oh, we did.
Yeah, in Mayfair.
When were you born?
I was born in 1924. February 1924.
You remember any of the stores that were here?
I remember all of them.
Can you tell me about it?
Yes, my first one I remember was Ray Rooksbury owned one.
Is that a general store we're talking about?
Mm-hmm, a general store, that's one I was working with. Mm-hmm. And, I tried to get the first owner that I can remember. I believe it's Dad Collin, uh-huh, on the store where the home is on now.
Right.
Then that was handed down to Reese Kirkcraft. Then Ike Mason took it over. Then Jim Welch took it over. Now Homan, well, Boone owned it for a while. Now Homan owns it. And there was down in Applegate. That is over there where Mr. Kitchen is.
Oh, okay. Where Kitchen's upholstery is now.
They run a store up there. Mm-hmm. Then there was Charlie Collins and Jim Williams had a hardware store. That's right there on the corner across home and store.
Okay.
And a Sam Matson had a garage right where Mr. Wood is. Then it's Mr. Claypool owned the store.
Where was his store?
His store is where Guy Courtney owns. Then Mr. Luke Duncan had a pool room.
That's the pool
where
room
Chris Pepper is today. And then on down the road, down just before we get to the school down here, Mr. George Dishes on the store.
On the way to the old high school, you mean?
The old Mason High School. Uh-huh. Then we go back to Mr. Taylor White. Now he was a blind man, couldn't see a thing, but he ran a grocery store.
Where was Taylor White's store?
It's right between where Bobby Suits and Mr. Wood owned. It burned down there. Right between there.
So you remember Taylor White?
Oh yes, I remember well.
Know any stories about Taylor?
Well, I know he, when he was, when, like I said, you're blind, couldn't see nothing, but he could go in and ask for anything you wanted, cut the cheese, he cut bologna, and weigh it up on the scale. And if you hand him a $20 bill, a $10 bill, a $5 bill, he could give you the right change without making a mistake.
How could he weigh something and know what it weighed?
Well, he had a sense of feeling of balancing that scale. They had a way, you know, the scale of a slide.
Uh-huh.
And he weighed that, and like I said, he could give you any kind of change without making a mistake.
Did the white people shop at Taylor White's store too? Or?
Yes, they did. They went in and bought bologna and stuff. It was kind of just a little store, a little grocery store, and people would come and go. He had some of the best bologna and cheese, even though you couldn't see it. It's some of the best you ever eaten it. But he was, now, I can't remember, if he wasn't from around here, I don't remember where he come from, he come here. But he was here as I was growing up on that store.
Were there any other black businessmen in the area when you were growing up?
Yes, we had a fella by the name of Jim Hicks. And he owned a grocery store. I think his first store was right there on the corner, like I said, was Wims and Collins, was a hardware store. Then he built that store down where Guy Courtney is now.
Oh, he built that store?
He built that store there.
What do you remember about Jim?
Well, I can't remember too much about him because I was small.
Yeah.
Because, I was really too small to know too much about him. But I remember this store. But I don't know too much about him. And then we had a blacksmith shop. And it's right there, that bride forever, Mr. Woods. It was in that, I remember.
Oh, who was the blacksmith we had?
His name was Doctor, they call him. He came from somewhere, and he was here for years. And he was a blacksmith.
What kind of work did he do in his shop?
Well, he did all kinds. Well, most of the nowadays, you know, shoes for horses and stuff like that. He made those. Then he'd shoe horses and stuff like that.
Was he a big man?
No, he was a small man, but he wasn't much taller than I was. He was a very small man. And then there was Jolly's Garage. I mentioned that. And that's where the Major League Car Shop is now.
Or Mesa, okay.
That's right there by the
right
bank. Right there by the bank. And if I first remember the bank, Mr. Ross was the president of the bank. That's Sam McQuarrie's granddaddy.
Uh-huh.
He was first I remember in it. Then we had a barbershop. Edward Johnson ran a barbershop, and he cut the white people hair. And his daddy had a barbershop, Ed Johnson, and he would cut the black people hair.
Now they would, whites and blacks would shop at Taylor White's, but they wouldn't get their hair cut at the same places?
No, uh-uh.
That ever make it, that make sense to you?
Well, at that time, yes. Mm-hmm. At that time, yes.
Why would they do it that way?
Well, I mean, it's different now. Just some people, when you're younger, you're just in the show set together. I mean, you could buy or do anything like that, but as far as the white people trading the black were often, it just didn't work back in the early 40s. 30s, late 30s, when I was coming up.
As a child, did you ever question that?
No, I didn't as a child. As you grow older, you often wonder why.
Yeah.
But then, of course, when you study back on the slavery, you just kind of figure why it was like that. But it had gotten better, you know, from the slavery, what it was the slavery time.
Did the children play together as you were growing up? Or did you have...
No, when I was growing up, our parents kept us in the yard most of the time.
Well, at 14, I can see.
We, all the black people lived around in what's called Conway, right up and down in the bunch.
Uh-huh.
So we would play up and down that street with different families. But we didn't go uptown, play, sit on the corners and things.
And you went to the black school then that was established where Cackler's
yeah.
is now?
And that school was built in 1921.
So it was fairly new when you went.
Uh-huh.
Take it, as big as families you had and as many mouths to feed, your parents still thought education was important.
Yes. We went, of course, now it wasn't no high school for the black here. We, those that went to the high school had to go to Maysville, then the job to be high school. And they had a bus to take them back and forth.
Had your parents gotten much education?
Well, most of my, I suppose my parents were just about 7th, 8th grade education.
But they had also gone to school. And
oh yes, they had gone to school. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they got to go to school. My mother, she came out of a big family too. There's about 11 or 12 of them. Well, now I see my daddy too, because I think if I count back on my daddy's side, it was 9 or 10 of them. So both my parents come out of big families.
So you were surrounded by aunts and uncles.
Mm-hmm.
And cousins, rather.
I still got several of them.
My Lord, how would you do when you had a family get together? How many would show up?
Well, now we have, you know, what you call it, a homecoming at the church. And it'd be, I'd say 400 or 500 people there. That's one day.
Yeah.
It's good. As a homecoming.
And a
they call it camp meeting them days.
Good part of it would be your relatives, wouldn't
most
it?
Most of all of them would be my relatives. Those that, you know, had moved to another city would come back home, especially for a day. But then a lot of them still do now. Come back home first Sunday in September when we have it. And but my daddy parents, I didn't know. They died before I was born. But I went back, I was looking up on the history of them. Like I said, the house is Myrtle and I own now. We went and checked back on the history, and like I said, back when my granddaddy, Bolin, bought this house in 1893, I believe it was, he bought this house. At that time, the deed would say a Baptist church, but they didn't say whether white or black. Even back when he bought it, it would say black. A partner used to own it, but we didn't know which. Because as I was talking to Ruth Payne, she said, well, what she owned was a white partner, so that kept me one. I still don't know which of which now, today.
Yeah.
But I figured if you go back, it didn't say it, it must have been a white partner, too.
Well, probably. I don't know, we'll have to check into it some more and find out. when we were talking about businesses a minute ago, was there any place for the young black men and women to gather?
No, we didn't have no recreation at all in town.
There wasn't a pool room or anything for the blacks?
Well, we could go in the pool room, but we had to go in the black. I mean, the back. The black would go in the back. But we still couldn't shoot pool, but we could go in that low, drink a beer if we wanted to.
But you couldn't shoot pool?
Didn't shoot pool. And we had to sit in the, had a back room, we had to sit in the back room.
And that didn't bother you as a young man, or you just assumed that was?
Well, we just assumed that that's the way it was at the time. But as we grew older, we just said, well, we don't want our children to come up like we did. We want to have something better all the time.
Yeah. Do you remember, you say you, one set of grandparents were gone, but do you remember your other set of grandparents?
Yeah, I remember my mother's grandparents.
What were their names?
William Lofton and Miranda Lofton. And my granddaddy Bowden, the house that I own, he sold to my granddaddy Lofton. So it's been in the family a long time.
Long, long time.
Well, ever since 1893, I reckon, it's been in the family.
What do you remember about your grandparents?
Well, my grandparents was awful good people. Now, they lived on the farm, on the Brooks farm. And then we would go across there, and they would have cows and stuff, and they would, we would go, I'd say about a mile a little better, and we would go get our milk and stuff from them. They would front some milk and country butter. So we had to walk over to that grandparents. And they always had something to eat when we got there. My grandparents were fairly well off because they kill hogs and beef in the wintertime, have enough to run it year round. And like I said, we would get, at those days, they would give you the liver and the heart. And a lot of the meat they didn't use. They would mostly keep the ham and the shoulders themselves. But the rest of it, they would always give you a lot of it.
You talking about your grandparents? Mm-hmm. Would give you the heart and the liver.
Well, the white people would too. They all would get together and kill maybe 25 or 30 hogs a day.
Mm-hmm.
And they all would work it up. And you could get the feet, the head, stuff like that. They would give away.
Is that the reason that we associate certain dishes, pork dishes, with the blacks more than the whites? Because that would be the part of the hogs that the black families would have the most access to?
Uh-huh. Yeah, because then they would pay them so much, you know, working too, but they would just give them, like I said, what they didn't want.
Yeah.
But you would get enough by having that many hogs there to run you all went along.
So how would your mother put it up? How would she save or preserve the food of your grandmother?
What, you'd have a white box, of course, in the wintertime, that set outdoors, so it's stay cold. So we kept sitting outdoors so it would stay cold, you know, froze.
Did your grandparents ever tell you any stories about when they were children?
No, not really. They didn't really tell me too much about when they were children. Of course, I know time had to be a lot worse then than it was when I came up. Because when I came up, it had been like changes.
Were they born into slavery, or were they?
Well, I'd say yes, it had to be a slavery back in the 1800s. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know whether your grandparents had, whether their parents had been slaves, or they had been slaves, or.
Well, you know, I think we all the blacks have been slaves one time, but grandparents, some had come from slavery.
They never talked about it at all.
Well, like I said, now I didn't know too much about. I didn't know my grandparents on my dad's side, but I would say they were really different in slavery way back in the 1800s.
But they never said anything to you kids about
it? No, But they would always just sit talking about how time would change. So you would hear them say that, but they didn't really say too much.
No. Did you ever hear any stories about there being an underground railroad in Maze Lick to help slaves go north?
No, I never heard of being in Maze Lick. The only one I heard was in Ripley, Ohio.
But you never heard of any families here in Maze Lick helping anyone
As far as, no, I never heard it mentioned in all my life that it ever was a railroad in Minnesota. The closest railroad we ever remember was over the Helena Station.
Yeah.
That was the closest railroad to us, as I can remember, and I never heard anybody else talking about it.
Well, I'm probably wasn't too clear. I'm talking about, when I talk about the Underground Railroad, not a railroad,
mm-hmm.
but as people helping other people to escape north.
No, not in Minnesota, because I can remember. I never heard anybody say that. But like I said, they would. I know they would go to Ripley and head Underground Railroad there, cross them to, take them across the Ohio River.
Yeah.
Into Ohio. But
did you ever hear about any freedmen being in Maeslick, or most of the blacks in Maeslick descendants of slaves?
Well, I'd say most of the older people, because I can remember some old people who. When I was a boy, I was 90 years old then.
Yeah.
So I know they had to come from slavery families, but like I said, they wouldn't talk too much. I think they were, when they were slaves, they were scared to talk and didn't talk.
Yeah. And it was just something they wanted to forget?
Just want to forget it.
Well, it's too bad, because it'd be nice if we could know more about the people, you know, mm-hmm. the family.
But I don't think you'd find too many people that. The parents will really tell them too much about slavery. Because I know the older people that I talk to, they won't even say about what their parents would talk about the slavery. But I take as many lectures as what I can hear from my parents. Most of the white and black got along fairly good. There wasn't no trouble too much, you know. I think that's because they respect the white man as he's coming up. And they didn't have any whole lot of trouble here in Maeslick. Maeslick has always been a kind of quiet town.
There just hadn't been any problems in the community.
It used to be a jail here. You used to sit down behind the pool room.
It did?
They have a jail there that keep you overnight, and then they take you to Raysville. That jail down there.
Do we have desperados in the jail, or just town drunk?
Well, mostly just town drunk. Well, we always would have a few to one or two that, you know, would want to fight. We'd put them in jail overnight. Anything serious, they'd take them on to Maeslick the next day.
Who was the jailer when you were growing up? Or the sheriff? Or
Jimmy was with the sheriff one time.
Was he?
But now, I can't remember why they didn't have no jailer. They just put them in and locked them up and forgot about them until the next morning.
No. No, it just seems that we're so close to the Ohio River that there must have been somebody around the Maeslick area who would help slaves going north. And we're so close to Ripley. But I had hoped maybe you might have heard of somebody.
No, I never heard anybody say it.
Myrtle, have you ever heard of somebody?
No, I really haven't. I've heard, you know, stories, but nothing that I could really document.
Well, I don't need them documented if I just have a lead.
Like I said, most people, I've always heard about it, but just, they went to Ripley and they crossed the river there.
But somebody had to help them get to Ripley. And we were always wondering if there was somebody around the Maeslick area that did.
I guess I never heard anybody ever mention that.
Yeah. Another question I'd like to ask you is, I know that there was a lynching outside of Maeslick at one time. Did you know anything about that or hear any stories about it?
I heard a story about it, but I don't know nothing about it. I don't hear say. After that happened, well, I tell you, like I heard it. The claim of this black and white, black man and white woman, I don't know what they got pregnant or what they call them together or what. But anyhow, there's some four or five of them got together and lynched the black man, what I heard. But I don't remember his name.
Did you hear anything else about the story at all, or just?
Well, I do know, I heard it said one woman, her husband wanted to go, but she told him, if you went, that I won't be here when you come back. So he didn't go to help lynch. And after, I'm not gonna mention his name, but after that, he did run a business and open up a business.
In Mays Lake?
He wouldn't go to help lynch. But that happened just, I think just right outside of Mays Lake, just a little piece.
Yeah.
I don't know too much about it. I just heard some people talking about it.
Yeah.
I think this. In fact, I don't think I ever heard any black people talking about it. Most of the white people I heard talking about it. Well, I used to hang around with the first door, you know, at nights when they were being there playing euchre. And I would hear
where would they play euchre?
In Rookford's store.
In the back end of it.
Mm-hmm. There was always be 5 or 6 of them there every night. Play euchre.
Growing up in Mays Lake, I bet you heard a lot of the older people telling stories. Do you remember any of them that they ever told you? Any of them stick out in your mind as a boy?
No, most of the people like to do nowadays, a lot of them told ghost stories.
Remember any ghost stories?
Yeah, I used to remember talking about when I was, I was living up in the alley. I would stay down at the store and it got dark. And he used to tell me, he said, well, when you get up there, I used to turn off right by the corner of the graveyard. When you get up there by the corner of the graveyard, you would meet this dog with no head on. But at first it used to scare me. Then I learned better. But I remember one night I was going home and it was fall of the year and there wasn't no electric light then, just maybe one or two houses had it. Because most none of the black people had any electric at that time. And I was going up the road and I kept hearing something sign and run. And my heart jumped up in my mouth. And so I couldn't figure out what it was, and just the wind was blowing. And then when I got up to this house where the light was, it went a bunch of leaves blew across the road, and that's what it was. And I thought it was that dog that they were talking about.
Dog with no head.
Dog with no head.
Did they tell you why the dog had no head?
No, they didn't say it. It just scared me. Then it was talking about going out, well, you know where the Park of Scales is. I don't know if you remember where that used to be.
No, I don't.
It's right on the other side of Preston, Sanford Park, a house. There'd be a scale there. Right down by the corner of that field. And you say, I used to hear people going home, I lived out on Bill Robb, saying that you used to get out there, the ball of fire would go across the road. I heard several of them say they'd seen that ball of fire. But they could never figure out what it was. Then I heard my father-in-law, Charlie Ewan, and his wife, Bowler, talking about when they was going out that way, they ride along in the car, and they claimed this man jumped up on the fender of the car.
A ghost?
A ghost.
What did he look like, they say?
Well, Mother, can you say anything about that?
Well, since he had on
the... Get talk louder.
Had on black pants and white shirt, but seemed like the hat was pulled down past the face that you could never see the face. Just a figure more or less just clothing.
They know who the man was?
I didn't have an idea who he was.
Did it happen more than once?
Oh yes, several people saw neighbors that lived beyond him. He'd come across in some kind of script and come in front of the car or would jump onto it for a short period.
Never said anything?
Can't say a word.
That was scared me because when I was courting Myrtle, I used to have to go out there. I'd come back at night, I would get thinking about that. When I got to that place, I was scared I was going to see him, but I never did.
Thank goodness.
I'd have probably run in the ditch or something.
Oh, you remember any other ghost stories that you used to hear?
Well, some of them ain't hard to worth telling. You have heard, I've heard a lot of them, but a lot of them I've forgotten. Because people don't tell the ghost story like they used to.
I think that's a shame.
Yeah. People would keep you laughing, and then when you were young, they would keep you scared. But I think that was called they were doing that to make you come home before it got dark. But now, my parents made us come home before it got dark unless we were working.
Yeah.
But like I said, we were working at the store, and sometimes we would stay a little later. The store would always be open at 9 or 10 o'clock. But we had our lesson before we do that. We couldn't go out of the yard and do nothing until we had our lesson come first.
So you had to do your chores, and you had to do your lessons, and then you could...
And then I could play. We play hide and go seek up and down the alley. When we got older, we'd hide over in the graveyard behind the tombstones.
That'd be scary, wouldn't it?
Well, it was. And of course, most times you couldn't find nobody once there's so many tombstones over there. So you just had to give up. Say, I give up, and then they'd come out. But we had a lot of fun when we was coming up. With family, we could go in their house, and they would treat you just like you were one of those. They fed you just like you were one of those. They just, like a one big family, happy family, lived in an alley together.
That must have been a nice place to grow up.
It was. We'd all, growing up, like I said, we'd go in their house, and whatever they had eaten, they'd give you, each house would do that.
Was there any person that sticks out in your mind, somebody that really impressed you, or somebody that was different, or some one person or two that really made an impression on you as a young boy growing up?
Well, I'm trying to think back how far back I can go. My grandmother, Carrie Teller, she's my great-grandmother. We always call her Maul Teller. She was a woman, a respectable woman, but she was always, a lot of times I had to laugh at it now. My mother would send us to maybe go to the grocery store, and I would have to go, if I went down the alley, I would have to go past the alley or her house, and she'd always be sitting on the porch. And get right on back up that alley. Get right on back up that alley. I know you're running out. So I had to turn around and go back because I couldn't say nothing, you know. And so my mother said, well, Maul Teller, I would call Maul Teller. She wouldn't let me go down past the house. I had to come back and go this way. So I had to turn around and come back down 68. But she, and then I often laughed at her, and I always respected that because she always told me to say,
she'd go make sure he behaved.
And make sure we weren't going to get in there. So I could say, well, Mama sent to town, go on down the other way. Be sure you wasn't going to get past her.
Did you go visit her a lot?
Yes, I did. We liked her. She was good to us, but she just make it mine. It wasn't the fact that she raised one of my sisters. She's the only one that lives in Cincinnati, Rebel. She raised her.
What'd she look like? What kind of a lady?
She was a light woman. Wasn't real big, and her husband Paul Teller, he was a little short as she was. They both kind of had light skin, and they wore glasses. I can never forget. And that's been years ago. I've never seen sitting on the porch and had long hair.
She left it long.
Mm-hmm. Left the long hair. But I go back to me and I'm now where I was raised up at. Mr. High Buck Hanna was a mill man. He lived right there in the corner where Farmers on now.
For who?
Farmers. Farmers, whatever you call them.
Oh, okay.
Right down the corner of the alley. The house is up for sale now, I think. And then Mr. Charlie Collins, his undertaker, was on the other side of the alley. And Mr. Charlie Collins would go out in his car, and we'd know just about what time he'd come in that. And we would go open his garage door so he wouldn't get out of the car, and he would always give us a nickel and a dime.
Just
let's spend money. Of course, and back in them days, you take a nickel and a dime, I could go to the down in the Applegate store and buy that little whiskey killer, get a whole sack for a nickel, and he would always give us a. We'd race to see who could open the door and get that nickel and dime. And he'd tell us both of the two of us, they said, and you give him a nickel, you keep a nickel. But now he run an undertaker business right across from our house. He had a big building there. He was a magic undertaker.
Did y'all ever go peek in, see what he was doing in there?
I have been in there when he was embalming people. What they don't do like they did now.
How would he do it?
Well, they would put them on the table, then they would have some kind of little tube in them. They would draw the blood out of them, and then put some kind of food back in them. But in that day, they couldn't keep them as long as they could now.
And he let you kids in there when he was working?
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of, that would burn your eyes. It couldn't stay in there long, no out. It would get in your eyes, you wasn't used to it. I remember a story about that one time. He had a fellow working for him, a black fellow working for him. And he had his arm propped up, and his black fellow was in there. He got underneath the table to do something, and his arm fell down and hit him. And his black fellow ran out of there, and he thought the man still living. He ran out there and went home.
I'd have been right with him. Who was the guy that worked for him that got hit by the arm?
Eddie Johnson. Mm-hmm. And he got killed in an automobile back in the 1936, I believe it was. Got killed in an automobile wreck at that time. So, but he worked for him all the time.
And you were, well, of course, you were too little when you were born, 24. Remember Prohibition, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, too little now.
But now you grew up really during the Depression years.
Yes. I remember my daddy working on it. What's it called? The Raymond Road, 324 now. Breaking rocks with little rock hammers to work down the road.
Was that one of those work projects?
They called it WPA at the time. It's a WPA. But they only got $2-3 a day. But it was a lot of men worked on it, just breaking rocks, just cracking them up. They had a little, some kind of little round hammer. I don't know what to call them. You break them rocks.
That was rough work.
To build a road with.
Did the Depression really, do you remember it bothering you? I mean,
well, no, see, at the Depression time, I was only about 6 years old. And I really didn't know what hard time was myself. But it bothered everybody at the time because, like I said, things were cheap. You buy a barrel of flour in them days, $2-3. But at that time, at the present time, it was awful. I could hear my family and say it was time was hard. But we raised a lot of dry beans and stuff. Beans and stuff.
So you were lucky. I mean, you had plenty of food.
Had a big garden. We had a big garden, and we could raise a lot of beans and potatoes and stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff we didn't have to buy to get to the best to buy them. They'd take the old potatoes from 1 year to the next and replant them. So, but they didn't have the money to buy now, so they have some old potatoes and replant them. But people don't do that nowadays because they eat all the potatoes up now. But they would save so much back, especially for that, because they said they wouldn't have the money to buy now, potatoes and corn and stuff like that. But most corn they didn't have to raise in the garden because they ate field corn. The landlord would give them field corn out of the field.
So your dad worked on the road and farm both?
Mm-hmm. He had to do both.
Your dad was a hard-working man.
He was. When my dad died young, he died when he was 60 years old. My dad been dead since 1950. Mm-hmm. I got married in 1951. When Myrtle and I got married, talk a little bit about us.
Well, I want to know how y'all met.
Well, I had known her family all her life. Well, school was her older sisters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They were about the same age I am. And I've known the family all my life. We went to the same church. Now Myrtle is 7 years younger than I am. And of course, she was young. Now I went into the Army.
When did you go in the Army?
When I was in 1942, when I was 19 years old.
Were you drafted or did you enlist?
Yeah, I was drafted. And I was in there until 1946. And I got sick while I was in the Army. I took tuberculosis. And I come out and I went to Veterans Hospital over Dayton, Ohio. And I had two operations. It took 7 ribs out of me.
My goodness.
Was when I went in, the doctor told me, said, and rest the case. Just lay down and rest it. It might come back on. He said, but if you take this operation, you'll never be bothered. With it. So I decided to take the operation. I stayed in there 18 months. And I never been bothered with it since then. No sign of it.
That's great.
So I thought I did the right thing.
Where were you stationed in the Army? What'd you do?
I was in a combat engineer. 1888 combat engineer was where we fought and built Air Force roads. I went to Indian China, burning over in CBIs. I was over in that about 31 months.
You were in a rough part.
I helped build a road, what they call the Burma Road. It built so high that sometimes you'd be up so high down that road, the clouds would be below you. So I spent 31 months over there. And that's why, after I came back, I got sick with tuberculosis, and then I went in the hospital. I came out 49. But I met Myrtle before I started talking to her before I went in the hospital. And she went on through high school. She, I think she graduated, when you graduated, 49? She graduated in high school in 49. And we got talking regular, a little more often, see one another maybe 2-3 times a week. The dad never saw we come to Mays Lake from the country. The daddy lived out on the Pickett Hawking at the time. That's Billy Hawking's daddy.
Uh-huh.
Billy Mason, I don't know. Daddy. And so we just kind of kept seeing one another. And one day I just asked her, will you marry me? I don't know what you've been sorry ever since or not.
I don't think so.
But she said, yes. So we got married in 1951. And we raised 4 boys.
What are your boys' names?
Michael is the oldest. Jeff is the second. Dale's the third. And Keith is the youngest. And we raised them up, come up through the church.
How'd you earn a living for your family?
Well, in 19, well, when I married, I lived on Stanley Wood farm for 7 years. And after that, I moved to Mays Lake in 1958. I started driving a school bus and drove up to this past year. I retired after 30 years of driving a school bus. But I had a disability, Social Security, income from the governor to help me with my school bus check, or else I couldn't have made it. But we sent them through grade school and high school, and 2 of them went through college.
Which two?
Michael and Jeffrey, the 2 older ones went through. Michael went to Moorhead, and Jeffrey went to community college, then he went to University of Kentucky for 2 years. We didn't have the money, but sometimes I told him when they talking about college, I said, if you want to go to college, I'll get the money somewhere. So we sent them to college and we're real proud of them. And Dale, he works for the county, state highway department, been there about 9 years now. Michael, he's a teacher in Louisville, Jefferson County School, teacher music at the middle school and the high school. And Jeffrey, what did Jeffrey work? What kind of work did Jeffrey
do? Oh, he's a buildings clerk at the
University
of Cincinnati.
Medical okay. Hospital.
So you raised a fine family. And how many grandkids do you have?
Just 3 right now.
The set of twins, and their names are?
The twins is whatever. I think they're good. Christopher and Cyril. I can't see Cyril.
Sarah Marie and
Christopher.
And then your oldest grandson is?
His name?
Gregory.
Gregory.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're good looking kids.
And we're expecting another grandchild sometime in the future.
Ah!
Feminist. Jeffrey and his wife. That's good. Yeah. Now, Jeffrey is married to a white girl. They live in Cincinnati.
That's quite a change, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something you get used to. It's just, you have to live with it. It's what they want, so we didn't try to interfere. We let our children live their own life.
Smart man.
We tried to teach them right and wrong when they was coming up. But when they got old enough and who they want to marry, we didn't try to pick one. We might have made a bigger mistake than they did, if they made any.
In between the years, when I would have children, well, I would go out and be gainfully employed. I've tried to the child get at least 2 years old before I would go out, but I gainfully worked 30 years of my life. I don't know how I did it, but I'd always stay in the home to give them a good start before I would go out.
Yeah.
I was real fortunate in getting a nice job because I went to high school and then I took business courses and things that were enabled me to, you know, get jobs that were meaningful. I enjoyed all the work that I did. And I have not worked now for 3 years, so I'm really enjoying life and the grandbabies, which are coming by leaps and bounds.
Well, I know, Rye, you and Myrtle are very, very well thought of, both in the black and the white community of Mays Lake.
Yes, we both work in the community, in the public, what we're well known. That helps, I think. We work in the public. I met in 30 years of working for the school, I've seen a lot of kids go through school that, well, some of them, I said I hauled them to school, now I'm hauling the children to school.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of, I've met a lot of people in 30 years.
You've seen a lot of changes in the children over the years?
Yes, it's a lot of changes. Children, well, I don't know how I would say that now, but it's altogether different generation coming out now than it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
How are they different?
Well, it's different because I think because it's the dope and the alcohol and stuff they have more privilege of getting hold of in schools and things. Back earlier they couldn't do that in school. They didn't have it. But now that school that stuff is kinda ruining kids. Because they try their best to keep it out of school, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's just hard when you got anywhere from 700,000 kids in school. Most of them, say, six of them are high school kids, but it's always somebody going to get something in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's what they just really have to do is make up their mind to leave that stuff alone. And so they got all the television, just say no. Yeah. But I can see it's ruined us, you know. It takes the last couple months, all these death we had from automobile wrecks. Just young kid just has come out of high school or had another year to go. Now I think it's mostly because of alcohol and dope.
Yeah.
I think really think because it came from nice parents. I know the parents. I hauled most of them parents to school.
Yeah.
And they came from nice parents and we raised up nice. But when you let a child go out, you don't know what you're gonna do. No matter how hard you try to raise them right.
Yeah.
But as you being a mother, you know yourself. And
do the best you can.
You do the best you can. But I'm proud of my boys because
you are.
We like I said, we're proud of it because we got them at this school. We would send us to college if they wanted to go, but they didn't want to go. And now Keith, I didn't say what he was doing. He's works for us with what's called Maysville Electric, where they make the little electric motor now. And he's a supervisor, an inspector there. But he has a good job. He's the youngest one of them.
I think job opportunities have changed for the younger black children from your day to now. I mean,
yes, they have more opportunity. But I've learned one thing about the generation now, the black don't want to work. It's jobs up for them, but a lot of them don't want to work.
You don't have any reason why?
Well, they want the stuff, they used to get the stuff handed down to them. Handed down has ruined a lot of children. They don't want to work. It's a job for some people. They just, you can't pick a job when jobs are scarce. You have to take what you can get. When we came up, we just had farm work to do. We worked on a farm, that's a little job, killing job. But nowadays, they can get job factories. Anywhere they want to. But a lot of them don't want to work.
Before we run out of tape, and we're about to, can you name your brothers and sisters? We forgot to get their names.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, yes, my oldest brother is named Foster. He lives in Arkansas. My oldest sister is named Lonzo. She lives here in Mays Lake. My second sister, a lady named Mary Bell, she lives in Cincinnati. And my other sister, Elizabeth, she's deceased. And I have another sister named Clara. She's deceased. That was my younger sister. And my other brother, named Robert, he got burned up in a fire when the house burned down. And I have another brother named Eugene. He deceased. He died last summer of cancer. And then I have another brother named Kenneth, lives in Wichita. And another brother lives in Cincinnati named Colin Rice. No, that's wrong. Colin Rice lives in Philadelphia. Virgil lives in Cincinnati. And I have a brother named John Jr., named after my daddy. He just recently moved from New York back to Cincinnati. And have I named all of them but myself?
That's pretty good. Well, I thank you, Rye. I can't call you Alan. I know that's your given name, but well, I've always known you.